Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's episode number 343 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag looks back at opening night from the NBA. At 12:30, the Browns now know whether they will have Baker tomorrow night, and more from around the NFL. In a mere minutes, we look at the numbers for Longhorn football and Steve Sarkisian in one-score games. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Wednesday. We hit hump day, and if you are a Houston Astros fan, you got to be having a good Wednesday. I give you a little love for that. Baseball playoffs, real good excitement yesterday. Now, none of it went the way I would want it to go, but I'll take my personal stuff out of it, and let's just talk about exciting baseball. 2-1 Boston late in the game. Altuve goes Altuve, and then the Astros just decide they're going to unload just to make sure, because sometimes you need insurance runs. They go ahead and unload 7 more runs on the Red Sox to even up that series. And in true historic fashion, the LA Dodgers did something they've never done in the history of the Dodgers franchise. For the first time, they won a playoff game when they trailed by 3 or more after 7 innings. Braves came back from 2-0, made it 5-2, and then the Dodgers had a great 8th inning. Bellinger a big part of it, obviously, and they got 4 in the 8th. And then they ended up winning that game. So that kind of gets their teeth into the series. I'm sure Braves fans are bracing and freaking a little because last year they got up and then they came back. And it feels like this could be the moment where the Dodgers get that turned around. So shout out to the baseball fans, but especially the Astros fans. A lot of excitement there. Both series will play again today as well. So if you like your baseball, it's a lot of good stuff. It's a good crossover time, Trey. If you like a lot of sports, it's a great time of year for it.
I actually tuned in to baseball for the first time in these playoffs last night.
Yeah?
Because I saw that the Astros-Red Sox game was tied at 2, I think it was, right before Castro had the big hit to give them the lead. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to tune in to see the drama. And then Castro got a hit.
The drama was gone pretty fast.
I feel like Altuve may have walked after that, and then there was another base hit, and I was like, all right, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
I'm clearly not a good omen for the Astros losing, so I'm not watching anymore.
We will get, as Trey mentioned, talk some NFL at 12:30, that Baker Mayfield update on tomorrow's game. The other thing let's throw out before we get to Texas football and start crunching some numbers, let's crunch on something else. You know Trey and I can be music snobs, but Trey can also be a food snob. I don't consider myself a food snob, but we both kind of agree on this one, and we want to get y'all's thoughts on it. Today is National Chicken and Waffles Day.
Yes.
And Trey and I are both of the opinion that chicken and waffles is an overrated food.
Garbage.
I don't know about garbage for me.
It's garbage.
Overrated for me based on kind of what the best versions of it is. We'll discuss that today. But what we want from you, if you want to try to change our mind on chicken and waffles, that's a whole other discussion. But we want your most overrated foods. What are the foods that everybody flips out about that you don't quite understand? For me, chicken and waffles is in the category.
And let me explain why chicken and waffles is overrated for me.
Okay.
There are a couple different things at play here, Chad. One is it's on their own, each is a pretty heavy food. Together, it is one of those foods that makes you feel like you just ordered the supersize at Sonic. It will ruin the rest of your day.
Oh, yeah. It's a commitment.
But maybe as much as anything else, we love talking about food vehicles on this program. And by we, I mean me.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle for which you consume various ingredients is so important with the food itself. It's just a terrible food vehicle, especially chicken and waffles at its most basic. And that is a piece of fried chicken that's still on the bone on top of a waffle with maybe some syrup drizzled over the top. It's just not a very convenient food to eat. It's a ton of work, and the payoff just isn't there. Unlike something like crawfish, which is also a lot of work, and you just rip into it with your hands, and in the end, have you made it a mess and was it a lot of work? Sure. But the taste was worth it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's a little worth it to me on a whole different level. Somebody already agrees with us, says it is garbage. Someone agrees with you. Not a nap guy is the label on the text
line.
Well,
good for you, because you're going to have to take a nap if you
eat
the entire chicken and waffles.
So here's my big issue, and you basically said it. So I love fried chicken, but fried chicken requires that I commit myself to animalistic things. Mm-hmm. I have to get my hands involved. We got to get in there. We got to rip and tear and shred. Rip and tear and shred does not equate waffles to me.
No.
So here's how you got to do chicken and waffles to make me appreciate it. You need to go boneless chicken. I know that's sacrilege, but you got to give me like the best chicken tender on earth, and I have to be able to wrap the waffle around it and then maybe put some syrup in there somehow, and maybe then I'm eating like a messy chicken waffle sandwich, then I might be interested.
Or like a gyro, or even we could even go taco there, because you are folding it over.
Chicken
and
waffle taco.
It would make more sense there. I would sub out the chicken tender with a fried chicken thigh, but I would consider the chicken waffle at that point. But it's still too heavy a dish for me, especially when you're usually eating it first thing in the morning. Do I look like somebody that wants to go eat breakfast and then have to lay down for the next 4 hours?
Plus, you know me, Trey, I'm about the OCD stuff, and there's certain rules to me. If you put pancakes or waffles on a plate, and I have a fork and a knife, there can't be anything on that plate that I can't eat, including bones.
Exactly.
So for me, If the waffle is the base of that, all right. But if you put just like a chicken leg on top of it, now you've ruined the whole idea to me, because now I have to worry about the chicken leg. I want to be able to destroy everything but the ceramics there.
You know how we all have those dishes or something involved with dinner or the cooking of dinner that we hate cleaning?
Yeah.
Just because it's so awkward inside, the soap on a stick doesn't work all that well, or the sponge on a stick doesn't work all that well with it.
Yeah.
And you really have to get your fingernails dirty to get it clean. That's how I feel about certain foods and having to fork and knife them. A piece of fried chicken, you're going to be eating with your hands on its own.
There you go.
But with the chicken and waffle, you're required to fork and knife the meat off of that chicken. And it just does not work.
Yeah.
It is a frustrating process. It's a process where you're not going to strip it as clean as it needs to be to get the full effect of the meat off the bone. And again, there's just other things on the menu that I'm likely to order ahead of the chicken and waffle.
So here we go. To get started, somebody has thrown lobster in the mix. You are in that category, right? You don't like lobster.
Yes, here.
You think it's overrated?
You're here.
Someone says, I love chicken and I love waffles. This is our man Tom. I love chicken, I love waffles. I will never try the combo. Not even willing to try the combo.
Well, if you love them together, give it a try, especially if you get what Chad just described, and that is the chicken waffle taco.
That I would try. A lot of people saying that they agree with us that it is overrated. Somebody says brisket to them is overrated.
I've spoken with those people. We need to talk about the Texas Monthly top barbecue places in the state list.
Yep.
Before too long. I don't know if that happens today necessarily, but there is a serious injustice on that list. Several serious injustices. But the fact that my Styles and Switch folks were given the honorable mention label versus being ranked one of the top 50 barbecue places in the state is an absolute crime, especially with some of the other places in the greater Central Texas or greater Austin area that were ranked, and in some cases ranked highly. Sorry, guys. Sorry, Texas Monthly. You really got that one wrong.
We'll get into some of that if you give us some food thoughts today. National Chicken and Waffles Day. Tell us what you think is the most overrated foods out there.
One other thing that I'm going to mention here before we move on to the sports conversation, and this is near and dear to a lot of people here in Austin. I'm sorry. It's a great idea. The product itself, I'm just not that crazy about. Tiff Streets, overrated.
Wow. I will disagree with that. But
it's a great idea. Fresh baked cookies delivered to a home or a workplace for that person to enjoy. Phenomenal idea. I don't know if they bake the cookies for long enough.
Oh, my God. My stomach would disagree with you. My stomach loves the idea of Chif Trees.
Tell me what your stomach thinks after, like, two or three of those half-raw cookies in a row.
Oh, my God. How dare you? How dare you? All right. Most overrated foods out there. Trey is trying to prolong the fact that we're about to talk about Texas and Coach Sark and one-score games. Anything else you want to talk about before we get into Texas football?
Can we talk death penalty? Abortion, maybe?
Yeah, right. Church and state. And
immigration along the border.
Yeah, immigration. Can we get into that? All right. So, obviously, the off week for Texas. Let's jump on in. We'll go spec set piece and start breaking it down here.
The spec set piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. Cheer on Verde with Specs' larger selection of world-class wines, spirited spirits, and craft beers. Score more at Specs, official partner of Austin FC.
So, Trey, at the Oscars every year, they do stuff for Best Director and Best Writing and all that stuff, but they also have, like, an adapted screenplay. So it's like you get an Oscar if you took somebody else's idea, change it up a little bit, rework it or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that is what I am when it comes to sports stats. I don't know that I always had the idea, but I'll hear somebody mention it, and then I'll go digging into a stat. So my adapted screenplay of the day is this one score stat, which we dug into a little bit last season with Tom Herman. And then it came back up during the game against Oklahoma State. They put Texas's record against Oklahoma in one score games. Hasn't been good. Oklahoma State hadn't been good. I think combined it's like 6-7 now between those two. And they said Texas has been in more one score games since 2017 than anyone in FBS, in conference, was what they said, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to kind of, I wanted to look up a little bit, kind of get us a current number. So here's a weird balance. After last weekend, Steve Sarkisian is now 16-14 in one-score games. Texas, since 2017, has been in 29 one-score games. So that would mean either he might be the perfect guy to deal with it, or maybe he's anyway.
It depends on his record.
Depends on the record, right? So he's 16-14. Texas is 14-15. In those games.
Okay.
They are also the only team I looked up, and I looked up five other teams that we'll get to. They are the only team I looked up that has three different seasons of losing records in this stat.
That's not surprising because Tom Herman was not great in one-score games, and part of that is because he's a guy who refused to acknowledge the value of 3 points early in a game.
He had a wonderful 2018, but before that, he was 1-4 in 2017. Then he went 7-3 in 2018. Trey, I like part of that. The part I don't like is you played 10 of them in a season?
Yeah.
10.
Yeah.
The next year it was 2-3, then 3-3, and so far Sark is 1-2, and they're the last three games we've watched, right? Those are the first one-score games he's encountered at Texas. So Texas, 14-15 in one-score games. Here's your comparisons. Oklahoma, 19-6 over the same time period.
So, I'm surprised they've played that many one-score games.
I was a little bit, too. So they've played in just a few less, but they've won five more. A&M, 15-8 over the same period.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been in, what is that, six fewer. Alabama's where you'd all want to live, 4-3. One of the wins, national title. One of the losses, to a national champion, but they're 4-3 since 2017.
And you would expect a team that's been that good for that long to not only have the low number of games, but for that record to be a little bit closer, because the teams that are actually upsetting them are doing so in a very slim fashion.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great point. Heck, in 2019, they were 0-2, lost to LSU and Auburn, and this year they're 0-1 so far because the A&M game was a one-score game. Clemson and Dabo, 10-4 over the period.
Wow. Okay.
In one-score games. Pretty good number. That might be a higher
number than I would have expected.
Maybe
too.
A little more than you'd want, but he's good at it. 2-1, 2-0, 2-0, stuff like that. And this year it's 3-2. He's had some close ones. The comparison, the team I picked, Trey, to compare of who would I think played a lot of one-score games, the team I picked is Texas's next opponent, Baylor. So I thought, well, let's take a look. Baylor's horrific 2017 included 0-4 in one-score games. But then they went 3-2, 5-2, 1-3, and this year it's 1-0. They are 10-11 in one-score games. So, Texas fans, let me give you that comparison. You have played in eight more one-score games than Baylor has since 2017.
Wow.
You have won four more of them, but you've played in eight more of them. That would concern me a little bit if I'm a Texas fan. So, Trey, this is one of those stats, too. I don't know how to compute it. I don't know how to talk about it. I don't know what to do with it. And how do you tell a coach, well, just don't be involved in one-score games, coach. Blow everybody out. That's easy to say, but what would it be? What would it be about Texas? Maybe it's just, maybe we can throw it all on Tom Herman, but what is it about Texas since 2017 that puts them in more one-score games in conference than any other FBS team?
A lot of it is Tom Herman and just his coaching style. I mean, he coached close ball games, and oftentimes he had more talent, but there were plenty of screw-ups along the way. On top of Texas, I think, getting a lot of teams' best shot and this not being your typically dominant Longhorn football team. Be curious to go back and see what Mack Brown's record and the overall number of one-score games. Let's see, we're talking about four seasons here. So let's say go 2001 through or 2002 through 2005.
Okay.
Like that might be an interesting number to look at. I'm guessing it would look somewhat similar to either Alabama or Clemson, where there weren't a ton of close games. When there were, he was winning more than he lost. That just wasn't the case with Tom Herman, especially after, you said that was his first year that he was 7-3 in one-score games?
Second year, 2018.
Second year, okay.
The year of the big Oklahoma win.
That's right, gosh.
So, the Dicker the Kicker game.
So that would have been a fluke year based on all the other years that Tom Herman was there. It was the fluke. Yeah. That was the outlier. So the number, in a way, is almost worse than that, too. And I guess in some ways it's better because those were 10 games right there. But hopefully Steve Sarkisian can pay closer attention to some of the little things, whether it is taking 3 points at the opportune time versus insisting on going for it, especially when your offense is not this Bama-like juggernaut and it's not easy to pick up a yard or two on 4th-and-1 or 2. Understand your football team well enough to know when you should be going for it, when you shouldn't, and also make sure that you are living by that all gas, no brakes mantra, and that is not letting your foot off the gas on either side of the ball in the second half, even after you've built up a multi-score lead.
I think my biggest breakdown on this would just be if you're a college football fan, based on what we know about scheduling nowadays, you don't want to be in too many of them because of what it says about your football team. To me, your average, again, Saban is at 7 of them in about 5 years. You need to be right around 1-1 there. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can go a little more. Maybe it's more like 2, but you don't need it to be that many. 29 in 5 years? Everybody can do that math. You're almost at 6 a year?
Right.
Think about the scheduling. And by the way, you're about to go to a world, Texas, in the SEC, where they'll let you fix your scheduling even more.
Mm-hmm.
You can schedule garbage, terrible, awful teams to help pad your numbers and pad your stats. And help you there. So if I went and did these numbers, and maybe I will, maybe I'll go crunch them for the Patriots and for the Rams and the Cowboys. You go in the NFL, Trey, I bet you those numbers go way up. They play a ton of one-score games in the NFL.
Yeah, but there's more parity in the NFL than there is at the college level.
And they schedule fairly in the NFL. There are games every year you have in the NFL that were pretty much every game. You don't have a say. This is a world where you get to pick. Nick Saban doesn't play Western Carolina because they flipped a coin. He does it because he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
A&M's not going to host Prairie View later in the year by happenstance. They picked that game.
Yeah, the Arizona Cardinals are favored by something like 18 over the Texans right now, which is a weird number to see on the NFL side of things.
Yes.
That's standard in college.
Exactly.
When you're talking about the best versus the worst.
And Arizona didn't pick that game.
And they didn't pick that game either.
It's not their choice. So, yeah, that I think is the biggest issue, is you just don't want your team in too many of those type of games because of how crazy it can get. That speaks to you're not handling the business you need to be handling sometimes. So that is what we're looking at right now. It's weird that the Sarkisian number and the Texas number are so close. But when I started to look at it a week or so ago, the one score part of it for Sark, he's been in a lot of those games. And you think about it, out west, Pac-12, what's the stereotype? Crazy games, wild games, games going to the end, lots of scoring. But now what we're starting to see, Trey, is it the fact that he was just in a game where he's up 14 and about to roll somebody, and then it all turned? Is it this whole thing about what's going on at the half? Why aren't you closing? What about the fourth quarter? Why do you look uncomfortable there and you looked fine in the first few plays? Is that what has created 30 of those games for Steve Sarkisian?
They were about to run away from all three of the games, all three of the last three games. They held on versus TCU, utterly blew one versus Oklahoma, and pretty much blew one versus Oklahoma State.
That's a good point.
And what it came down to, I think in all three games, no, actually two of the three games, because the Oklahoma game was not about a turnover in the red zone, is turning the football over in the red zone either by something like interception or by play call, where they go for it on fourth and short, try and punch it into the end zone to put the game away.
The TCU play, right?
Stopped yeah. Versus the Horned Frogs, yep. Versus kicking the field goal right there to make it a two-touchdown ball game plus a two-point conversion, too.
Yeah, that was a chance to go from 12 to 15.
Right.
And they were trying to make it 19.
You're going to go for it right there. You need to pull out your best play. And I don't know if your best play in the fourth quarter of these games is running it with Bijan Robinson either between the tackles or right around the tackle. You need to come up with something a little bit different. That's not working anymore to help you close out ball games.
All right. Again, the Specs text line is already fired up with your most overrated foods. It's National Chicken and Waffles Day. Trey and I think they are overrated. Somebody says, Trey, oh, this is silliness. Seafood is overrated. What, all of it?
You know what?
Every bit of it?
You know what? I don't agree, but I respect your opinion on that because I need to be in a particular mood to enjoy seafood. And even then, I'm pretty picky with which seafoods I go with. Like, we were at Salt Traders the other night, and Salt Traders is a great seafood place. I don't crave most of what's on that menu, but boy, their scallops are really good. So there's some times where I'm just in a mood for the Salt Traders scallop, and it hits the spot.
Somebody says the idea of crawfish just doesn't make sense to them. Dirty, gritty crawfish, they think they're overrated. Vegetables aren't overrated.
I totally understand the crawfish thing and the vegetable thing, too.
No, nobody's overrating vegetables. We just know that we need them and we need to eat more of them. That's a different thing.
Do you and I need to talk more vegetables? Because I'll leave you believing that vegetables are overrated after I talk about the vegetable.
Oh, good Lord.
With the exception of a couple. Get that celery, eggplant, and Brussels sprouts out of there.
Maybe that's what they're talking about. Nutella overrated, according to one of our listeners.
That's interesting because a lot of people feel like Nutella is underrated because for a long time it had a ton of popularity in Europe, not so much in the U.S. I'm seeing Nutella a lot more here stateside as well, and it's beloved by many folks, my kids included.
Ding, ding, ding. I haven't had it, but now I need to, and I like this place. Somebody says Torchy's has a chicken and waffles taco. All right, there we go. There it is. Chicken and waffles.
They're putting their queso on top of the chicken and waffle taco. Another place that's overrated.
Come on, baby.
Sorry if you love it. Torchy's is overrated.
Oh, how dare you? How dare you?
Anybody you talk to about Torchy's is like, oh, yeah, I love Torchy's. Their queso is awesome. What? It's a taco place, though. Why are you mentioning the queso first and foremost?
Oh, dude.
It's almost like they've brainwashed you people into believing it's something better than it is.
Oh, I do the, what is it, the Democrat, and there's an orange something or other, and then there's this, oh, man, it's good. I like the tacos. I always mention the tacos first.
When was the last time you were at Torchy's?
Thanks to my child who never wants to go, it's been...
You don't get to pin this. Stop pinning this on your child, Saddam Hussein.
About a month, something like that.
Oh, okay, so that's not that long.
Yeah,
I thought you were
going
to say like 6 or 7 months.
Oh, no. We've been at Torchy's in the last while. Also, the margarita's nice to pair with the tacos. Their tacos and a margarita, that's a good evening.
Okay.
They do strong margs, too.
Oh, really?
You want to make sure you have your DD.
Is it like the Purple People Eaters at Baby Acapulco?
I can't comment because I've never had it. That's another legendary thing I need to have in this town. I've never had the Purple.
I don't know if you need to at this point.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
It's going to whip you, though, right? That's the whole
point.
It's
like Everclear in these things or something. Do you really feel like you need to drink Everclear in your mid-40s?
That's fair. Is it frozen or is it rocks? Because I'm a rocks guy now when it comes to margaritas. I don't do the frozen anymore. I've tried to get away from that. I get the headache too easily.
It's been so long. I'm inclined to say frozen, but they may offer up the rocks alternative.
Right. If I can do purple on the rocks, I could do that. All right, some more overrated foods for you. We're talking Texas football. Up next, we'll go into the NFL. Week 7 has some interesting matchups. Cowboys take a breath, along with 5 other teams on bye, plus Baker Mayfield's update. Will he be able to go tomorrow night? Fantasy owners, you may want to pay attention. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Mm-hmm. you gotta hate that voice to hate this song. Who hates this song? But can there be anyone? I just got happy when you played it.
I didn't realize what I was playing. I just hit play the first song on Random Blues Mix from Spotify.
Oh my God.
I didn't recognize it by the name of the band or by the song title, but you're right. It is an incredible song.
Now, is it called like Up the Country or
Going Up the Country?
Going Up the Country. Okay, so I always get this one wrong. This is Canned Heat?
Yes.
Okay.
Well done.
I always get Canned Heat and Bread mixed up. I somehow mixed those two up. Mm. So my first thought was Bread, and I went, no, Chad, I don't think it's Bread. I think it's Canned Heat. So it's always, I always battle with those two. Just like I always mix up Cypress Hill and who is it I mix up? Cypress Hill and
Bone Thug and Harmony.
No.
Oh.
No, it's the one. So somebody, somebody does Jump Around.
Oh, House of Pain?
House of Pain, thank you. It's House of Pain and Cypress Hill. I always mix those two up.
I wouldn't have necessarily classified this song as blues, but listening to the rhythm, it is. Yeah, yeah, it's blues.
All right, so you're going with a blues list today?
Yes, and it looks like a pretty modern blues list as well. The London Souls are on this list. Nathaniel Rateliff, Gary Clark Jr., Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears.
There we go.
Black Angels, so I really consider this list all that bluesy, but there are some people on the list who are known for making blues, so we'll roll with it.
As long as we are talking music, let me hit this as well. Register now to win a pair of tickets to a really cool show, the Moody Center Grand Opening Concert. If you haven't heard about it, it features none other than George Strait. Oh, no, not just that. With special guests, Willie Nelson and family, and Randy Rogers Band. Due to high demand, they already have a second show that's been added, and the Horn has given you a chance to win a pair of tickets before you can buy them. Tickets don't go on sale until Friday at 10 a.m. Visit the contest page at hornfm.com for your chance to win. How about that?
Boy, George is getting himself back out there.
Yeah.
Closed down Friday night of both weekends of ACL. Opening the Moody Center up.
You think there was a moment where George was just sitting around the house and either he or someone in the house said, you know what, King? I think you need to get back out there and see your people.
Either that or he's got like severe gambling debts that he's having to pay off.
That's
so he's having to unretire.
The flaw we don't know about is George Strait can't resist an under, right? Like he's just been betting unders on basketball and soccer his whole life.
George Strait is a bigger strip club hound than anybody would realize.
Oh, my. All right, so check that out at hornfm.com.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gentleman's Clubhouse.
Gentleman's, yes, please. We are asking for your overrated foods today because it's National Chicken and Waffles Day. Trey and I are not necessarily fans. Not that we hate chicken and waffles, just think they're overrated.
What a great topic for a slow sports day, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones coming in. Somebody says Bevo's overrated. How dare you? How dare you? I get what you're doing there. Somebody says wasabi is overrated as the food. Wait, wasabi is a food?
It is. I mean, technically it's a food. It's more of a palate cleanser than anything. What I would suggest to you, if you don't like wasabi, because I'm with you, most of what we think of as wasabi isn't that great. Go to Tomo Sushi on Parmer. It's just west of Mopac, or I guess technically that may be north. It's on the north/west side of Mopac,
uh-huh,
on Parmer, Tomo Sushi. They serve this fresh wasabi that is otherworldly.
Okay.
My favorite things to eat in this town right now is their fresh scallop dish that includes some fresh wasabi. It is incredible. It does still clear the senses out like the other wasabi does, but it's something different.
Somebody also informs us that the purple margarita, the famous purple margarita, is only available in a frozen form. All right, I'll try it anyway. I'll go try it at some point. I'll do a frozen one.
They almost have to go frozen to try and slow you down on drinking it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'll suck your allotted two down in no time.
Oh, my Lord. Yes, good stuff. All right, I'll have somebody drive me over there at some point, and I'll try that. A lot of good stuff coming in. 337-3776 on the Specs text line. So before we get into NFL Week 7 specifically, there is a big injury story to get us started. So if you're a fantasy owner and you might have either Baker Mayfield or a weapon on the Browns team, pay attention. Denver at Cleveland will happen tomorrow night, and it's going to be Bridgewater against Keenum. Oh, my God. I barely got that out without the acid reflux happening in my body. Case Keenum's going to have to go because Baker Mayfield, we told you at the end of the show yesterday, they were going to get another opinion. They were going to get Baker's doctor to look at it. They were going to have the team doctor look at it again, double check the MRI. Remember, it's the opposite shoulder. So it is the left shoulder for him, but it is a torn labrum. So they're going to go with take advantage of the Thursday game here by getting him extra rest, getting him the 10-day rest. I'm assuming what they're going to do, Trey, and then probably this time next week start looking into, all right, where is he now? They're hoping this is just one game. They're hoping they can beat the Broncos without him. They're 3-3. This is a desperation type of game for both teams. They both sit at 3-3. But tomorrow night, it'll be Case Keenum at home against Denver.
I'm surprised that they're saying that he may be able to play in a couple of games, considering that just 2 days ago, people around that franchise were wondering if this is going to be a season ender. And I realize that he's putting the surgery off for right now, but at the same time, you don't want to jeopardize his long-term future by trying to rush him back this year. It sucks because you had high expectations, and you can still have expectations to at least make the playoffs, but make sure he's good enough to go to where he's not going to suffer something much more consequential as a result of your insistence to compete this year.
Yeah, there's two quarterbacks I would reference to Cleveland to watch out for. One of them's RG3, mm-hmm. and the other's Cam Newton. Just be careful. You don't want either one of those things to end up on your team. You know what I mean? You don't want Baker Mayfield to feel like either one of those stories.
Completely agreed.
Be very, very careful what you do here.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, speaking of quarterbacks that were hurt earlier this year, I guess, I think he's okay now. Carson Wentz is, of course, still starting in Indianapolis. Did you see the move that the Colts made yesterday?
I did not.
They cut Jacob Eason.
Oh.
And activated Sam Ehlinger from injured reserve.
You know what? I did hear Jeff Howe say that today. Yeah. He was talking about Longhorns in the NFL. I heard him say released Eason now that you're saying that. That's a little bit of a surprise to me.
A little bit of a surprise because Eason was one of those high QBR guys in the preseason. But when you watch the games closely, you realize that oftentimes he was the beneficiary of who was out there with him and also the defense in front of him. Whereas Sam did get some of those opportunities as well, and he had his good and his bad moments. But it looked like Sam was a guy who was better suited for the NFL than Jacob Eason.
Well, I think that, I don't know, I think the end of it is, because ultimately what you're looking for there is a third string guy that you hope can one day become your backup guy. Maybe what they looked at, I could make this argument. Eason's ceiling probably felt higher to them, but his floor felt lower because his floor involved more turnovers. Sam's floor might be Sam's floor, but I never felt like Sam was reckless with the football. Jacob Eason, the way he plays the game, it's kind of an all or nothing vibe at times.
Very feast or famine.
That might be the reason you go with Sam.
And in a league, you're right about that with the backup quarterback. You don't want a guy who is betting the mortgage from play to play, and so you're either going to get super rich on a play or you're going to end up busted on another play. Sam is more of a game manager than I think Jacob Eason is capable of. But I also think that Sam is also capable of leading a true NFL offense given the proper time and preparation as well.
I'm really interested to see how that story plays out because we know Sam's going to work. Now, we've been saying that since day one, mm-hmm. right? He's going to work. He's going to be a good teammate. He's not going to get in the way. Sam will be the farthest thing from a distracting backup quarterback you could ever hope for. Now the question is, can he take that arm that doesn't feel like a badass NFL arm, and can he put enough around it where he turns himself into maybe, a Colt McCoy type, where he could be a career backup guy, but that could also come in for, say, 2, 3, 4 games and carry your team and maybe get you a couple wins.
It's funny, I have more confidence in Sam Ehlinger being a starting quarterback in the NFL than I ever did Colt McCoy.
Do you really?
Even when he was the guy starting in Cleveland.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That was a wild story. I wish I could go back and give Colt a different situation to start with. Just give him a better chance. But maybe it wouldn't have worked for him, but I just felt like he got dealt a very bizarre deck right from the beginning.
Well, and then James Harrison coming in and basically 52 card pickuping his career.
That too. Yeah, good point. And way to carry out the analogy. That was well done. Well done.
That's got to turn into a promo, I think.
That's good. That's good. I have to put a star down for that one. 52 cards. That's pretty good.
I may even come out of retirement to promo
you
that
may
one,
do that
Chad.
One. I may let you do that one if you want to. That was good. All right, so NFL Week 7 begins with that Denver-Cleveland game. Here's something else to keep in mind. Cowboys and Bills are both off, along with Minnesota, Cowboys' next opponent, Pittsburgh, the Chargers, and Jacksonville. But yesterday we talked about the six teams that are either 6-0 or 5-1. Two of them I just told you are off. Green Bay hosts Washington. The Rams host Detroit. Arizona hosts Houston. Oh, my God. The schedule makers have done those three teams a massive favor. The only one of those real good teams that plays a good team this week is Baltimore, and they host Cincinnati. So, Trey, let's watch those four teams all at home, and I'm going to make the argument three of the four should not just win. They should win and stomp, and then we'll see what Baltimore does with Cincinnati. So the rich should get richer in the NFL this weekend. Kind of a weird week, but without any great matchups. There's only one matchup, Cincinnati-Baltimore, of winning teams this week.
There's only two matchups that I really care about this weekend. And, of course, I'll be watching the games because of fantasy and to make sure that I'm up with what's happening, injuries and whatnot. But the only two compelling matchups for me this week are Cincinnati-Baltimore, which you just mentioned, of course, and Kansas City-Tennessee.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. And that should be obviously better than it is. Kansas City's 3-3, so they're technically not a winning team. But, yeah, that's a good one. That's in Tennessee. Can the Titans come back off a short week, too? Short week for Tennessee after Monday night.
Because even the matchups that we thought might be a lot of fun at the start of the year, and I guess you can throw Indy-San Francisco in there as that third matchup that you'll be paying attention to on Sunday Night Football, but like that matchup's not what we thought it was going to be in the preseason. Yeah. New Orleans-Seattle, we thought that had the potential to be a really cool game, and I guess in a way it is, but then again, Russell Wilson isn't in there. Seattle's dealing with a bunch of injuries. Jameis Winston hasn't hit his stride with the Saints just yet. We'll see how they look coming off of bye, but yeah, it's just a bunch of apathetic matchups. And actually, Vegas and some of the lines that they've set in these games, including with those best teams versus worst teams, it really speaks to how ugly a weekend it is in the NFL. We have numerous double-digit lines happening this weekend, highlighted by the 18-point line that currently exists for Arizona over the Texans. 18-point line.
Ugh, that's crazy. It's a perfect point to bring up. This is one of those weeks where the Sunday and Monday nighter were supposed to be good, and it's just turned into something else. So we'll talk some NFL this week, though. Cowboys with the week off, of course. They get ready for a Minnesota Sunday nighter at Minnesota a week from this Sunday. All right, coming up at 1, we'll dig back into the Longhorn stuff with Justin Wells. We talk to him every Wednesday about 105. Justin Wells of Inside Texas and On3.com. His thoughts on how Arch Manning enjoyed his trip to Austin, but also what this team looks like right now at 4-3. Up next, though, in the crap bag, night one of the NBA, including the soap opera in Philly. This is The Horn.
Shirts and skins.
Played this one before.
Yeah, I've played it a couple of times now.
Who is this again?
This is Austin's own, the Black Angels.
Yeah.
The start of that song could very well serve as an hour intro for this program. If I ever make a change, we may switch to that.
Yeah, it's a great, that is just a, something's coming to town and you may want to lock your doors. We're not exactly sure what it is. Yeah. I mean, it just, a storm is coming.
Austin's Psych Kings and Queens. I don't know if there's any females in the band. But, yeah, the Black Angels are part of this Spotify Blues Mix, and I think we're going to have some pretty good music ahead of us for the rest of the show, too.
Hey, and yesterday we were talking about what Carlos Santana can do with one particular pedal and setting. What those guys are doing with the fuzz on that guitar is incredible.
Yep.
Just so wonderful, that bluesy sound they get. More blues stuff coming from Trey as we roll along. We got Justin Wells coming up at 105. What did he think of the Longhorns dropping another lead and losing to Oklahoma State? Also, we'll talk about the recruiting angle because, you know, Arch Manning and a whole bunch of guys were in town for a big recruiting weekend. Right now, though, let's get into the crap bag. NBA drama has begun.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. Last night was night one in the NBA. I'll get to the games themselves, but let's clarify the Ben Simmons story because that's where the drama is right now in the NBA. He's missed multiple preseason games. So he's already been fined about $1.4 million before the game they have tonight. So let's start there. Then, because he's been suspended for tonight's game, because he refused to go through a practice. They were doing a defensive drill in practice. He wasn't doing it right or refused to do it. Doc Rivers said, you need to do it. And he said, either no, I don't, or just didn't do it. And eventually Doc Rivers said, all right, you need to leave. So he did. They are fining him about $227,000 for that. Can we all just imagine that, whatever your paycheck is right now? Can you imagine spitting on $227,000? I don't care how much money you make.
Nope.
$227,000. That's crazy. So then, Trey, after the Sixers practice, I believe it was yesterday, because they weren't a part of last night's games, and it was Joel Embiid gives answers that included the phrase, we are not here to babysit anyone. And he also refused to say Ben Simmons' name. I believe he referred to him as that guy at one point in his answer.
Well, I'm glad we're handling this maturely.
Ooh, this is going to be a mess. This is going to be a mess. Bad communication in the offseason. Team tried to figure out trades, but it didn't happen. And then now he wasn't going to show up. They didn't think he was. And all of a sudden he just shows up, goes through protocol to get things started, and then refuses to be a part of a practice and ultimately has been suspended. So they're kind of back to where they were, and it's just going to be every single night. Doc Rivers is going to have to answer these questions. Embiid is going to have to deal with it. It's going to weigh him down all year.
They're just going to have to drop his value or whatever they perceive his value to get him out of there. I don't understand why Philly is insisting on playing this game with Ben Simmons and why the Nets are playing this game of coronavirus chicken with Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes very clear at a certain point that these guys are not going to be any good for you to have around the franchise, and you just have to ship them off somewhere else. And if you're not getting the proper value, because Ben Simmons is a former number one overall pick, Kyrie Irving, one of the league's superstars when he's out there and not talking about things like flat earth theory, then unfortunately you may have to take a little bit less, but the value that returns includes not having to deal with the theatrics anymore.
Yeah, you know that's why Kyrie says the COVID thing is so dangerous, because the COVID sits on top of the earth. It's got nowhere to go. Can't fall off because it's flat. Makes it more dangerous.
Okay.
Pay attention. You got to know the science. So you mentioned Brooklyn. They lose last night 127-104. Milwaukee hangs the banner and beat them pretty good. I mean, they laid it on them. But it's interesting. I'm watching that game thinking about Kyrie. I'm thinking about, okay, it's Durant and it's Harden. They're trying to figure out how to play together. Durant 32-11. Patty Mills gave him 21 off the bench, but it just felt like there was a missing piece all night long, and you knew what it was.
Apparently, Drew Holiday went down at some point in that game with an injury. Hopefully, he's not out for too long.
Here's the thing that also stood out to me. The Freak went 32-14-7. Guess what he did at the line?
At home, he was probably pretty close to 100%.
He was 7 of 9.
Yeah.
Different rhythm, quicker delivery. Looked good. Look like he's worked on it.
Well, even going back last year, he was better at home than he was on the road.
But
people were giving him the countdown.
But he was still taking too long. Last night, I mean, it was like 3-4 seconds, Trey. It was great. That part of it, he's quickened it up. He's worked on it. He's not just going to take it for what it's worth. that team shot well last night. If he's doing that at the line, now I don't know what to tell you to do. Because now he's pretty much unstoppable.
Yeah, there's definitely a line between going too fast and going too slow. If that's where the line is for him, that's great for him. I always hate it with guys who are struggling from the free throw line, or even guys who aren't, but guys who have these really exaggerated and extensive, like, pre-free throw shot, activities where they're dribbling it.
The rituals and all that,
they're going around their body a couple of times, and they're spinning it in their hands. It's like, man, just take a breath and simplify things. It's like a pitcher who has this really exaggerated windup. It leads to a form of the yips that becomes very difficult to get right once things start to go wrong. So for him, if it's just about dribbling it once or twice and then putting the ball straight up, hopefully that works for him for the sake of Milwaukee fans.
Yeah, so watch it next time you see a game. He still does that pre-shot practice thing, but the ball isn't on him yet, so the clock's not started. As soon as he gets the ball, I think it's he's going like with a little quick little roll of the ball, one dribble, go. And when I was watching, the period I watched, he didn't miss one. He only missed two throughout the night. So that's something to keep an eye on. The other thing is Golden State comes back and beats the Lakers last night, 121 to 114. Steph ends up with a triple-double, 21, 10, and 10. Poole had 20 to help. Wiggins had 12. But the number that got me, Trey, was Russell Westbrook's plus-minus. LeBron's plus-minus was minus 2. Davis's plus-minus was minus 2. Russell's, minus 23.
Ooh.
They had to console him after the game. He's going to have to figure out how to fit into this idea.
To console him?
4 of 13 shooting, 0 for 4, because he felt horrible, because he felt like he cost him the game.
Ah, it's just one game.
But here's what they're going to need. He's going to have to figure out how to transfer.
They better get ready. He's going to cost them more than one game throughout the year.
But how do you take a quantity guy like that and transfer him into a quality guy? He's getting to do what Allen Iverson never got to do. How does that work? Kobe was that guy. Kobe was a pure volume guy. What if they'd have put Kobe on a super team later on and said, all right, Kobe, now you got to figure out how to spread. Like, it just doesn't work the same way. Russell's having to reprogram his brain.
Similar questions were asked about the Brooklyn Nets last year when they acquired James Harden.
Yeah.
One basketball for three guys who work best with the ball in their hands.
What's best? You know, is it best for Russ to bring the ball up the floor or LeBron to bring the ball up the floor?
Well, I think they do want to reduce LeBron's workload during games, which means having him not dribbled up the floor nearly as much, letting him go up more at his own pace and really pick and choose those spots where he's taking the ball from the inbounds up the court and then making something happen.
Russell was also 0 for 4 from beyond the arc. Why is he still shooting threes? Do you know?
Because
they all do?
It's what the league does, but it's also what he's done since he's come into the league.
You are right about that. So that was night one in the NBA. Tonight you got San Antonio and Houston getting their season started. Houston will be at Minnesota, 7 o'clock tip there, and San Antonio will host Orlando down in SA, and that is a 7:30 start. If you're a Mavs fan like me, that's not going to be until tomorrow night. Mavs and Hawks go on national TV. See what they did there? Luka and Young, it's not bad. That'll be tomorrow night in their first game. Up next, let's talk some Texas football. Justin Wells of Inside Texas and On3.com. What did he think of Texas and the effort against Oklahoma State? What's he think of these next five games coming up? And how did Arch Manning and the recruits enjoy their weekend? We'll hit it all, plus a little Cowboys. He's a Cowboys fan, too. He'll have a smile about that part of it, at least. Coming up on the Horn.